Blog Talk Radio. welcome to Into the Darkness. I am Pam Ray, a poet on All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. Now, you don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is our dark poetry night. It is also an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut porn or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult content. And so if neither of those are your cup of tea, please make sure to check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something for everyone's taste. And tonight is carryovers and open dark poetry. The last dark show we had a theme of dark and creepy stories that we asked people to write and record, and we have some leftovers from that, plus I ran a contest on All Poetry with a picture prompt. The picture was of a pair of boots on an abandoned beach with a crow sitting on top of them, or raven. I'm actually not quite sure, but either way, a dark bird with a very really ominous kind of feel to the artwork. And so I'm looking forward to the dark rites that we are going to be delving into tonight. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and bring a guest on. And here we go. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show. Glad you could join me.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd take an extra effort and stay a little later and sleep real late tomorrow.
Oh, there you go. It's always nice to have a day where you get to sleep in.
Yeah, well, my wife doesn't think I should have too many.
Yep. Well, it's good to stay busy, that's for sure. That's for sure. And, all right, so I'm thinking my co-host, Rex, must be quite exhausted and getting some much-needed rest, but perhaps he'll join us a little bit later. And so I'm just going to go ahead and get the first poem posted and start playing it. Now, first up will be The Red Scarf by Theo Onick. And she was the gold winner in the Dark and Creepy Tales contest. And we have a recording for this one. I'll go ahead and push play.
The Red Scarf. A red scarf leans down the waist of a dark silhouette. Her moves are somber, resembling the death she's deserting. Passing the gnarled old oak tree near the gate with leaves to be taken by the wind blows against her head. A sudden flicker of cruel lightning storms in her eyes. A raven calls approvingly at her senses, catching the spirit of the place. The sun has fled, leaving more space for the moon to come up, to be seen on the fading light of Sunset Bend. A few whiffs of air behind are sissing and whistling down the track left behind. The wind starts blowing dust and leaves into her body and face.
Come on now,
the whispers chime in.
Let's see where she's going.
Well, we can't leave these grounds. Who said so? Nobody, just that we can't. Ask the old Triller. He is not around, and I can't read a sign saying we can't follow her. And how are we supposed to get out there? By means of wind and leaves carried with dust. Are we the leaf in her hair? Are we the scarf taken by the winds? And I'll be the dust covering her body and soul. Ten steps taken forward, last glance at the stone to her right. Here rests our beloved father, Mr. Roland Piles, doctor of numbers and killer of charms. Hadn't she come here to pay honors to a real murderer, this would have brought up a warm smile on her lips. But her inner son was dead, with the acid corroding the waste of her heart made of steel. Expected to walk out of the red created by the memory of a pile of human flesh lying in a blood-flooded kitchen, herself was exploring the truth of this moment in two times. Creeping down the spine of the cemetery trail, the frightful ghost of a slaughterer watches her with patience from the top of a monument, the stone angels around, each carrying the knowledge of tears growing moss and lichen for passing ants and resting flying bugs to carefully smile their superior ephemeral infinity.
Where is she going? Let's follow her. Let us see.
Her legs walked her through the open gate, closing with the urn of the dead to grab a piece of her searing flesh. They were too cold, and she seemed dead inside, but her cover was still soft and beamed with rivers of hot pores of pumping life. There had to be a chance for a second try at living. Looking back, as she closes the door to her personal home, she perceives the ghosts of her late hour's slaughter. The fire lit in her eyes speaks of the blood she carried to the surface. She wishes to remember this. The wind menaces her with a burst of restless leaves and dust cutting her breath. There are cars down in the city that hum desperately all the way up here. The three little ghost fans she's already got are wailing into the falling night. She closes her eyes as she leaves the gate to its guarding post. The red scarf remains hanging on the pikes of the screeching cemetery gate.
Wonderful sound cloud there, Theo. I was just absolutely impressed. And I'd like to say welcome, Silk. Glad you could join us.
Hey, everybody. And yeah, I heard like, I think the last about quarter of that, and it was fantastic. The ambiance that she was setting there was just awesome.
Absolutely, absolutely. And a happy birthday to you, old man.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh,
and,
I'm like 22. What are you talking about?
22 and holding, right?
Yeah, I'm like 22, yeah. Shut up.
I'll be 71 in August.
Right?
Yeah,
well, just to let people know, when we ran the contest for the recorded rights, that was the last dark show, we did allow for up to 600 words, which will be why, they'll be a little bit longer than usual, because we wanted to be able to give people enough word count to really get deep into a storyline. And Tom, your thoughts?
She did a really nice job of setting the stage, of developing the somberness of the moment and the characters and all the people who came into play. I liked the way she finished it with the red scarf remains hanging on the pikes, because she brought it in as an important note in the beginning and played with it briefly, just as a scarf in a couple other places. So it helped carry the whole piece through. It was a nice, it really did a good job of being dark.
I agree. She did create a great dark atmosphere in here. Wonderful use of sound effects that sounded, natural, like they fit into the story and were well-timed. I thought this was a powerful and intriguing, dark and haunting tale. I thought she had wonderful use of imagery and sound. As I've said before, it's great to have imagery, but if you're going to create a story, you need to have more than that. It's great to have dialogue, but you need to create an entire scene. I remember I was reading a book years ago about, writing short stories and novels. And it said you need good dialogue, but if you have good dialogue with nothing surrounding characters, like you don't give any description of the environment they're in, the scene they're in, you basically might as well have them standing like in empty space. And so she does a really good job of creating the surrounding, and how are we supposed to get out of here? By means of wind and leaves carry the dust. I'll be the leaf in your hair. I'll be her scarf taken by the wind. And I'll be the dust covering her body and soul. 10 steps taken forward. There's such a kind of a sense of intensity there. And what's interesting is there's almost a sense of somebody being watched over. It's almost like there's this, to me anyways, I kind of gather this kind of this spiritual element of this battle of good and evil over this young girl. I think it's quite a layered rite and quite deep. And so it's definitely a lot to take in, but well worth it. And let's see here. Got to refresh my page. And all right, so Silk dropped, and he has to find a better area for his phone reception. So he's going to be a few minutes. So in the meantime, we will move on to the next poem. And at least with having, I think we have like 7 or 8 SoundClouds tonight. It'll save my voice a bit and everyone else's. All right. Up next is The Glass by Babbler. And I'll go ahead and find that recording and push play.
The glass. Tonight I looked into the glass and saw the face of she who passed. I saw her there in a cloud of chestnut hair, staring, staring with that faraway stare. Funeral dirges quieted some time ago in the cemetery awash in drifted snow, deep in the clay where cold bodies lay, staring, staring so far away. Phosphoril sinks down upon her bones, ringlet crown marked by engraved stones, sockets open wide, devoid of hazel eyes, staring, staring in endless surprise. At least I thought that's where she'd been, tucked down below, not seen again, till I looked into the glass, muffling a sudden gasp, staring, staring into the past. I'd seen her just the night before, under the lamp outside the door, saying goodbye to he that's mine, staring, staring into his eyes. My sister laughed in his arms, seducing him with youthful charms, her name I swore that little whore, staring, staring in sudden horror. Lying curls bounced side to side, midnight rendezvous swift denied, but I was sure that it was her, staring, staring at my sir. Lilting laughter escaped her ruby lips, bubbling anger envisioned this, the man I wed with her instead, staring, staring, world turned red. When she tumbled down the stair, turning and falling from here to there, still at the base of the winding case, staring, staring at my face. Later I was told she'd been that night, dancing with a man beneath the lights, honeyed eyes from out of town, staring, staring, deeply drowned. And now as I look into the glass, I see the face of she who'd passed, there in a cloud of chestnut hair, staring, staring, that faraway stare. Ensconced in her funeral dress, draped over her hollowed chest, twin black holes without console, staring, staring, dark as coal. Pushing, nudging me toward the edge, to tumble off the same infernal ledge, hands upon my back, falling with a crack, staring, staring, and it all goes black. End poem.
What a wonderful read. I have to say, she really effectively used the pause of her voice to create the atmosphere. I thought that was very well done. And I'd like to welcome Afasiana to the show. Welcome, Afasiana. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Thanks, Pam. Pretty good. I had a clumsy week of falling down the stairs, but such is my life.
Oh, goodness.
I'm alive.
Well, I'm glad you survived your clumsy week. Yeah, I understand what that
was. That was an excellent poem by Babbler.
It was. Would you like to further comment on that?
Sure. I really liked the repetition of staring, staring, and how that was the second last line of each stanza. I feel like that worked better than if it would have been the last, because it adds that little bit afterwards. It's like staring, staring, and then what is happening with the staring. And then it gets really spooky when you find out the eyes aren't even there anymore. Sockets open wide, devoid of hazel eyes, and still staring, staring. It's very haunting in that repetition, and you're right, her pauses were just perfect for creating that kind of atmosphere. I thought she did a really good job at her read in this. And there's something about a young girl ghost that's just extra creepy. Like the way that, like, you know, with her pretty curly hair, and it's the sister, and something about that just makes it even more eerie. I like how, like, it's not actually, like, you know, scary in the, like, you know, knife-wielding maniac kind of way, but it has this, like, gentle spookiness to it that I really enjoyed.
I like that, gentle spookiness. And, yeah, I have to agree. There is something really creepy about the female ghosts or children too. This pretty young ladies and children in general as ghosts are quite creepy. And, Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I love the structure. I mean, I saw tri-set and then the repeated phrase and then matching that last phrase with a rhyme to the last, you know, to the last line of the tri-set. it set up a really nice rhythm that allowed her to develop the story without, you know, and almost in a sense like, you know, the evilness is pacing down the page and catching up with you bit by bit, piece by piece. She developed the drama of it really nicely. She told the story that lies within all this in a nice, succinct fashion, but never losing the sense of horror, criminality, jealousy, all passion that is embodied in all of this to create a real abiding sense of not so much horror as something scary, but horror more from something so distasteful and improbable and wrong. It's really beautiful the way she did it to the last set where it's just really well done.
Absolutely. Yeah. The rhyme and the flow and the repetitive staring really added to it. It had almost a Poe type feel to it, and I liked that with the repetitiveness. I what I found interesting also is, you know, because it starts out, tonight I looked into the glass and saw the face of she who'd passed. You know, at first I thought maybe it was, it was herself was the ghost. But then you get to the lines, my sister laughed in his arms, seducing him with youthful charms. Her name, I swore that little whore, staring in sudden horror. I like the use of whore and horror because they're so close that I just think it's kind of like a nice little way to play with words is to have similar sounds. But then I thought, well, maybe her sister is the ghost, and this is a story of revenge. I find it very intriguing to think about that. The imagery is wonderful, and the use of, like, some of the language, like ensconed. You don't see ensconed a lot, and so I think that was just some beautiful use of language and imagery. Draped over her hollow chest, twin black holes without console, staring, dark as coal, pushing, nudging me towards the edge to tumble off the same infernal ledge. It seems to have the atmosphere of a tale, a ghost story, but also perhaps a tale of jealousy between sisters and revenge. And so I really appreciated that, and it's very well done. And up next, and I have to say, I really like when people make recordings with SoundCloud. I would like to mention to people that if you can't call in, or you just don't want to because, you know, maybe you're a little shy, but you are willing to make recordings of your poems and share them with us, that is absolutely the next best thing, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And up next is Creeper by Kel Smiles, and go ahead and find that one, push play.
Creeper. Everyone said, oh yes, he's a great guy. Makes us all laugh and has the best smile. You should definitely go out with him. Take a chance, he could be Mr. Right. What do you have to lose in the end? They were right about one thing. I agree. He is easy on, eyes bright with mysteries. Long, strong, long drink, a shot of golden whiskey. Coffee dark eyes, olive tan skin beneath well-trimmed salt pepper, beard and hair. But I have learned looks are deceiving. Girls in the break room hang on him, as if his every word was a kind of magic. But they don't know what kind of havoc. Let them giggle and wonder at him. Between you and me, I know the truth. If I didn't need this job, I'd quickly quit, get as far away from him as I could. Tired of the cat and mouse playing, stupidly I listened to my friend's advice. Loneliness decided for me, went outside my comfort zone once or twice too many. Lesson learned too late. But damn, he could sure make me burn. His fiery touch, liquid kisses soon turned. Tried to pull away, said no. He ignored. Sexy smiles became toothy piranha grins. With a bite to match, abused, bruised skin. Like the ones around my neck and breasts. Fear clouded my mind. I don't know how. I broke free. Out the door, across the street. Called the cops to stop him and rescue me. Needless to say, they had to investigate. Ah, here they are now, taking him away. End poem.
Great read, Kel. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. And Tom, your thoughts?
This is sharp. It's such she sets it up really nicely with describing somebody who everybody thinks is enchanting and delightful, and oh, you would be so lucky to be with him. And she shows how quickly that almost a narcissistic personality becomes quickly someone who doesn't know how to take a no and is dangerous as hell. She does it really well. She brings it in nice and slow and easy, dangles the little possibilities at you, and then drives the dagger home in a sense. I thought the last lines were just, I broke free in the door across the street, called the cops to stop him and rescue me. It's really well done and very sharp.
Absolutely. You're right. It is a sharp write, and she does set it up really well, and I like that she delves into, as you said, how quickly the narcissistic personality changes when they are confronted with being told no. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I liked how she worded, as if every word was a kind of magic. They don't know what kind of havoc. People who have that kind of narcissistic personality can kind of seem enchanting at first. They're really good at fooling people. And I like that it was described as the magic, but becomes havoc. I also really liked sexy smiles become toothy piranha grins. I thought the piranha was really great. Because that smile suddenly becomes deadly. You don't want that smile. I thought that this was a clever way of exposing an unfortunately real threat.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad you said the word real. And those two lines you picked out, the piranha grin and the magic becomes havoc, I thought were really strong lines also that I gravitated towards. But real, that's what makes this one particularly horrific, is that because while this is a story, it's just a story to everybody. There are people out there that this is their life. This is something that has happened to them or is happening to them. And I think that's what makes this one particularly horrific. And I find it really interesting how there's almost at the end this nonchalance in attitude. But it's that in itself is almost creepy too. Like, I don't know what it is about it, but it's very effective. And you both are right. She really touched well on that narcissistic personality, how at first it can be really charming. And then the idea that all of a sudden you don't see the charm anymore. You see the evil. You see the person who won't take no for an answer. I like the imagery at the end. Fear clouded my mind. I don't know how I broke free out the door across the street. And then, you know, it was like I said, it smacked of a cruel reality of life. And I think that's what made it a good dark right. So very well done. And let's see what we have next. All right. Well, have a good night, Tom. Thank you for joining us. Oh, I see he's already dropped. So it's good to have him join us while he could. All right. Well, I was hoping Bobby was going to call in, you know, even though she has a SoundCloud. I know sometimes people like to call in, but up next we have The Immurement by Captain D2, and we have a recording for that. So, let's find that. And
The Immurement. Nemo me impune lacessit. No one attacks me with impunity. From Edgar Allan Poe's The Cask Amontillado. After unbinding his wrists, a voice whispered something in his ear. And his hand in the middle of his back shoved him into the void. A door closed. Falling forward, he heard the door slam. He reached for his face and removed the blindfold. And as he slowly opened his eyes, he could see nothing. Though certain he had removed the blindfold, he again reached for his face. His hand swept past his unencumbered eyes. Still, there was only blackness. He stood slowly and reaching forward and to either side, his fingertips met with no structure, no barrier, no obstacle, emptiness, unrelenting and absolute. He could feel nothing. His ears could detect only his own breathing and the deafening roar of silence about him, enveloping him like a heavy woolen blanket. Still, he listened intently and could hear nothing. Tentatively, gingerly, as he slid his feet forward, his hands groped for anything solid, and his fingers met with a cold, rough surface. Placing his palms on it, he had located one of the limits of his confinement. Strangely comforting, he placed his back against the expanse, let his body slide down the length of its rough surface, seating himself on the chilly floor. And as he looked and listened intently, he could detect nothing. At this moment, he would have given all for a sliver of light, for the merest suggestion of a sound, but this diabolical cocoon offered neither. And as hungry as his senses were for stimulus, there was nothing. His mind struggled to grasp the incomprehensible situation. Faintly, vainly, he called out, asking if anyone was there. But there was no answer. There was no echo or residual sound. There was only nothing. Breathing quickened and heartbeat raced as the enormity of his plight seeped into his senses, and he tried to wrap his mind around the events that had led him to that moment. A sudden hand over his face, a descent into blackness awakening masked and immobilized. The only thing crystal clear was his helplessness, cool dankness to the surroundings, a distinct mustiness to the air that suggested somewhere deeply subterranean, quiet, hidden, secret. The boundless blackness was at once both terrifying and soothing, and his weary, bewildered mind succumbed to the palliative embrace of the darkness. He awoke with a start, not certain of why. He had no notion of the passage of time. As he struggled to focus, he became aware of a glow emanating from somewhere before him. As he crawled forward toward the light, he recognized its source. The light came from an old mobile telephone, and as his eyes adjusted to the light, he gasped. He could see a message displayed on the screen. As he read the message, a wave of dread engulfed him. At that moment, all was revealed to him. He understood where he was and why. The wave of dread became an icy flood of panic. He stared in abject horror at the words on the screen, knowing that in seeking justice, his captor's choice of retribution, much like his exaggerated grievances, would represent what he believed to be equal in its extreme. As the light from the telephone's tiny screen began to fade, burned on his retina was the same message whispered in his ear by his captor as final torment, the words, "Nemo me impune lacessit." And he wept silently as he felt the limitless pitch darkness swallow him forever. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Bobby. Really appreciate that recording. Absolutely beautiful. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. I loved the way that sensory deprivation was used, the line, and as hungry as his senses were for stimulus, there was nothing. And then when she says, succumb to the palliative embrace of the darkness. So it's interesting to me how the darkness is the threat, but at the same time, it is a bit of a comfort when you just, like, give into it like that. Palliative embrace was a really excellent word choice for that particular line that explored the mixed feelings about the darkness. And the thing about, like, sensory deprivation in this way is it's not something that you really can do anything about. So if it's too bright, you can close your eyes. If it's, you know, if it's too loud, you might be able to cover your ears. But to have no sound and no light and just nothing, there's really not much you can do to deal with that. I mean, maybe make noise yourself. But that just, it feels like you're completely lost within that. I thought she did a really great job of creating suspense in that way, and you wonder, like, what is in this nothingness? I thought she did a wonderful job.
Absolutely. I thought so, too. I really like the classic feel to this. And, you know, that obviously it's kind of a takeoff of the Cask of Amontillado by Edgar Allan Poe. But I like that she puts twists, like it's not a copy of the story, but it's because it obviously takes place in modern times, because he has a cell phone with him, as you know, as you mentioned, that the light of the phone is dying. Obviously when you're buried inside walls alive, you don't get good reception. Otherwise I'd like to think he'd call for help. But I like that she took the general premises of that, of the Cask of Amontillado, which I'm pretty sure I'm slightly mispronouncing, but that's okay. But with the original story that Poe wrote, it very much focused on how the guy kept the person who committed the crime of putting the other person live inside the wall kept defending himself because his honor had been, you know, he had been accused of obviously something to do with the wine. I'm blanking out now. I am so sorry. But anyway, it really became the ranting of almost like a madman who felt the need to defend his actions, and the whole idea of when we punish, when people are punished beyond what they deserve. But here she focuses, and then as you said, Afasiana, on the whole experience of the person in the wall, you know, what they're going through, the sensory deprivation they're going through, their last thoughts, their last, you know, the whatever movements or the experience of being enwrapped in the darkness. And, you know, because there's not a lot of room for movement and because obviously there's not a lot to do, she really has to focus on small movements, like as she says, tenderly, gingerly, as he slid his feet forward and his hands groped for anything solid and his fingers know the cold, rough surface. You know, I like how she has that attention to detail. And even the attention to detail of mentioning how his breathing quickened and heartbeat raced. You know, those, I like that she brings in the physiological reactions and the psychological reactions of somebody who is caught, you know, in a space that they know they cannot escape from. And so absolutely just a stunning write with a wonderful classic feel to it and very well done. All right, and let's see. So called in for a little bit, and then he had a drop, and I was hoping eventually he'll call back and join us. And all right, El Montillado, that's how we pronounce it. That's what Frank says, and makes sense. Thank you very much, Frank. And speaking of Frank, up next we have his poem, The Umbra of the Scavengers by Poetic Picasso. And we have a recording for that, so here we go.
There is the brute of savage in all of us, just waiting to be then unleashed to the world. A fierce beast of sundry names and continences, with a celeritous tear that few ever survive. The beast that I bespeak of today is the most vile of all the kingdom of the species upon the earth. For his throne is built upon rows of bones and skulls of victims that succumbed to his carnal predation. His game is the most perilous seduction scene. His whore is a never-ending nightmare of ghastly death. An island of vacuity in the lasciferous disport. The random and tiny acts of a balmy sight or feast. His Mephistophelian cackle and haughty grin of pleasure haunts the innocent doomed guests of honor invited within the undaunted grew of the ominous ambages before the towering in the tenebrous balls. His delights are the perverse amusement of selected game, a stealthy hunter of decorative trophies of a collection of heads, a sadistic devil of immeasurable torture and torment exacted, disguised by his debonair persuasion in natural charm. Oh, the devil that I describe to you is very known to me, for his name is synonymous with the visible face of death. A familiar foe to those that fear becoming rotten flesh and perishing under the bold umbra of the scavengers. You see, the game had become a terrible bore, but a terrible thought had occurred to me afterwards. Animals have instinct and man has reason to apply. Then why not hunt man for the excitement of sport? Yes, yes, what a wonderful idea. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Wonderful.
What a wonderful idea, Indepome.
My apologies. All right, wonderful recording there, Frank. Absolutely an excellent read. Thank you for that. And Faziana, your thoughts?
I think she has, like, an amazing performance quality. It's like a classic horror movie type of narration. His tone and his enunciation really suits the style of storytelling. He has such an amazing vocabulary with words like lithiferous. Like, he uses wonderful words that are unconventional and yet fit so perfectly. And that laugh at the end, wow. that was a performance for sure.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Yeah, he does definitely have a performance voice that's really absolutely appreciated. And I'm looking for the show link there we go. I'm going to repost the show link for our new member that I see in the room, and make sure that that's there in case they want to listen to the show. And, you know, put in the phone number. And then, of course, I'm going to comment on Frank's right because it is absolutely wonderful. And that's 657-383-0024. All right. There we go. Okay. And as we can all tell, I do not talk and type at the same time very well. But, first of all, I like the use of the word umbra instead of shadows, although the shadows of scavengers would have been nice alliteration. I like the way the word umbra flows, and I think it's because it has that R sound to it. These are nice, short, impactful lines. I like how, you know, and this was not written for the contest with the picture of the raven or the crow, but it fits really well with it. I really like his Mephistophelian cackle and haughty grin of pleasures haunts the innocent doom, guests of honor invited within the adaunted crew of the ominous homages for the towering and the tenebrous bows, his delights are the perverse amusements of selected games. This very much, it reminds me of two things. First of all, it reminds me of the kind of the Roman Empire emperor. What was his name? The one who was really into the stuff that, well, a lot of them were, but started with a C. I can't remember. But anyways, it very much reminded me of some of the sinful type orgies and indulgences that would happen in ancient Rome. It also makes me think, because there's kind of that idea of a feast being set out, is it makes me think of the ancient Greek mythology, like where, you know, like if you go into the underworld and you eat something, like where you're not supposed to eat something, like the story of, not Demeter. Was it Demeter who went down there? Or was
her daughter, Persephone. Demeter's the mother, but Persephone.
Yeah, ate the seed of the fruit. Yeah,
pomegranate.
A pomegranate. That was it. That was it. You know, and so it really has that whole kind of classic of feel. And I felt bad that I didn't wasn't looking straight at the words when he did the read, because how he did the evil laugh. And then that pause, you know, and I thought the poem was over, but yeah, I thought that was very effective in that. And I also like, for his name is synonymous with the visible face of death, a familiar foe to those that fear becoming rotten flesh. It's interesting how he almost like this personification of evil or death is most feared by those who fear death itself, who really want to just stay alive. A wonderful dark tale and very well done. And we have Silk with us. Welcome, Silk. Glad you could join us. Are you on mute?
Crap, I was on mute. I was sitting there saying all kinds of cool stuff. But, yeah, hey, Miss Pam. Everybody else, I heard a bit of Frank's poem there at the end there. Yeah, that evil laugh was awesome. And, yeah, just wonderful stuff.
Absolutely. Yep. Right now, it's me, you, and Faziana.
Hey, Faziana. And, yeah, Faziana, I'm on the mend. I think the last day or two, I got my birthday wish was I didn't want to be sick anymore, and today I woke up and I was definitely feeling a little bit better. So.
Oh, wonderful!
Well, happy birthday!
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Yep. I'll send you a couple of cases of honey whiskey and some brand new, not even used yet slaves. So you'll have
there
to train them in. But, you know.
I don't mind. Training's kind of the fun part.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Let's go ahead. And Caligula, that's who I was thinking of. But Nero was another one. But I was thinking of Caligula. And all right. Let's go ahead and... Silk, I've put up your poem. Go ahead and give it a read for us.
Yeah, but I've been working on this one for like 2 weeks because of my stupid whatever the hell I caught here. But okay, here we go. And this one's a necromancer poem, but okay. Phantasms wail within the shadows. The dust of eons weighs heavy. The well of my lament dry as brittle bleach blows. Once I drank deep of my phylactery, brimming, churning chaos, a myriad of souls gnashing in the agony of their confinement. And I, drunk upon the intoxicating flavor of death, blackest debauchery, devouring the very flames of immortality, my hand capable of weaving this festering light into hungering tapestries of enslaved flesh. Visions of necropolis, pillars immolate in black flame, the dead lights of 100,000 stars collapse beneath the jowls of necrotic worms, sits upon its zenith, a sun that snuffs all light. Petals of eternity wither in my grasp, and my sight blooms spider-webbing cracks of virulent cancer, gluttoning on the desolation wafting from oblivion. As I bend knee to the corpse goddess, poison of my heart, I sing your runes with the ardor of decay upon my tongue. Phantasms wail of the broken bodies of their cadavers, cry out in anguish for the cheated respite of their rest. Wail, prison, shadows tethered to their rotting bones, and I, necromancer, most high, most revered of my people, drive the dagger into a young man's breast, so another victim may rise and join our army of the fearless dead. And pump.
Wonderful read there, Silk. Now you got me wanting to write a really dark tale. I haven't done that in a while. Very cool. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
Thanks, Beth.
This was really great. I love your description in the stanza, the favored petals of eternity wither in my grasp, and my sight blooms spider webbing cracks of virulent cancer. I really like that line. I love your vocabulary. I had to look up what phylactery was, so thank you. I love learning new words.
Thank you.
You're teaching me. I thought this was really great. You have this kind of like spooky story, and I really like that the people who you're bringing back to life are kind of rebelling against you a little bit. There's that, you know, the angriness at the anguish of being cheated their respite. They're supposed to be, like, done with pain, and you're bringing it back, and there's this cruelty to that that is, I was going to say delicious, that's not right, but, like, there's just, I don't know, there's something in this that's, like, darkly exciting. I really like it.
Thank you. In all fairness, I was inspired a little bit by the series Deathgate Cycle on the phantasms part of this poem, in part because there was a part there where they have the phantasms that follow around these animated dead that they raise up, and it just struck me, and I had to weave that in there a little bit.
Very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that. I like that you wove that in there. This wonderful use of dark imagery, very epic. I like what you had to say, Phasiana, about there being this kind of sense of rebellion and with the people brought to life. And I like the first-person narrative with lines like, an eye drunk upon the intoxicating flavor, death, blackest debauchery, divine, the very flame of immortality. There's something, like, I think that's a sign of a truly evil character, is when they become that obsessed with an idea, such as the idea of power or the idea of immortality, and it becomes their core obsession. I also like the imagery of the favored petals of eternity wither in my grasp, and my sight blooms spider webbing cracks of virulent cancer flooding on the desolation wafting from oblivion. You just have a way with just dark phrasing that isn't cliche. Like, you just, you have such a unique voice in the way that you word things, and I think it's just absolutely wonderful, and this was very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. I appreciate that, because I always try, I try to say things differently, at least, I don't know. Sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it does, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and I'd like to welcome Rakentor to the show. So welcome, Rakentor. Glad you could join us.
Rack, I miss you.
Yeah, I missed you guys too.
All right. Well, did you get a chance to hear Silk's poem or read it?
No, I just got here. Sorry. Hey, Silk.
Oh, all good.
Okay.
Hey,
all right. Well, we'll.
Good to hear you.
We'll go ahead and move on to the next write, which is a write from the Picture Prompt Contest, which is The Sky Weeps Poison by Glow Lizzy. And we have a recording for that. So let's go ahead and find that. And here we go.
The Sky Weeps Poison. A thickening fog creeps along. The air fills smoldering ashes that burns through flesh, leaving bones blackened and petrified. Through the mist, a tune is heard, a requiem carried upon softening clouds. Like a plague, it swarms overhead, bodies crumbling into dead salt grains. Catastrophic mechanics wielded by hands crafted for death and mayhem. Whistling above, throbbing with a bang, trenches now graves and playgrounds lay level. As the sky weeps its poison, death sweeps in to feast upon misfortune. The dead lay wayside in heaps of burnt, crispy flakes.
Not sure if that last bit of music was supposed to be on there, but it was fun to listen to. I really like Glow Lizzy's dark writing. And with this poem, what I had said is that I really appreciated how she did more than just describe the picture. She had powerful visceral imagery that brought the reader into the scene of violence and destruction. I did also enjoy her use of sound. That was a haunting rite. And I think one of the most important things about this rite is that it reminds us that death is often violent and ugly. It's not always like death, the war, plague, destruction. It's violent, it's ugly, it's not always peacefully dying in your bed surrounded by loved ones. Sometimes it is a truly horrifying experience. And I thought she had wonderful use, as I said, of sound and imagery. So this is very well done. And Rackentor, your thoughts?
Yeah, the thing I like about this is she's giving a nod not just to the destruction, but the efficiency of it and how, you know, I guess technology, the way it goes, they're just getting better and better at making these things that just wipe everything out. You know, and she describes the totality of how something that's been, you know, exploded or whatever in the picture, so completely obliterated. And she does an amazing job of that. You know, her use of language, and like you said, she brought sound into it too. You know, I appreciate it too for the fact that, you know, I can't see the picture too well, so she kind of painted it for me in a very vivid way. Beautiful destruction.
Absolutely. And Silk, your thoughts?
And get off mute here.
Oh, there you are.
No, I'm here. Hey, you know, it always takes me a second to get off mute. But, no, I did. I dug this, and Glow Lizzy does write incredible darkness. And that picture, I'm totally grabbing that picture to put on my poem that I wrote for my, because I think that would fit my necromancer poem quite well, honestly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I love this third stanza. Catastrophic mechanics wielded by hands crafted for death and mayhem, whistling above, dropping with a bang, trenches, now graves and playgrounds lay level. That was just so, it has such a great post-apocalyptic feel, like, after all the, all the nuclear bombs have dropped and just decimated the earth. It's kind of like I saw this that laying there, I guess, in a way. It's just, it's crazy. I really enjoyed the imagery. And you're right, Glow Lizzie writes incredible darkness. I really enjoyed it.
She does, absolutely. I'm glad you brought up the line that has about the playground being demolished. And that, you know, it does, like you said, have a post-apocalyptic feel. But that line also reminds us that death also comes to the young, that war affects those
yeah.
who don't fight in it. So that was a really good line to gravitate towards. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
Really well done. In the beginning, it felt a little too real to me because I'm kind of surrounded by forest fires right now. So the smoldering ash and the burning flesh, and I was just like, oh, God. But then it goes into, the post-apocalyptic feel. I really loved the way that it was worded, crumbling into dead salt grains. The description of the bombs as catastrophic mechanics wielded by hands crafted for death and mayhem. It's so much better than just saying, there was a bomb. Catastrophic mechanics. And to describe it as whistling above, because there is that noise that, I've never been around a real bomb, but, from movies, the whistling noise of the explosives, really interesting. And the playground part hit me hard, too. It really creates that scene of, devastation. It brings it something about when children are the ones who are hurt, or if their playscape is gone, even if the children are okay, to lose that kind of innocence of the playground and now be in this post-apocalyptic world is really quite striking of an image. I thought that this was very well done. It's short, but it has so much in it, and it's just beautifully worded.
Absolutely. And you're right, that the kind of loss of innocence hits hard. And he did a wonderful use of that, you mentioned, the whistling, that kind of, that adds to the whole eeriness of the poem. So wonderful comments, everybody. All right. Now this will be, the next one up will be our last recording for the night, and then I will be putting people to work reading poetry. But it's nice to have so many recordings because we've gone over an hour of having nobody except Silk having to read. So up next is Art by Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey, and we have a recording for that. So let me go ahead and find that and push play.
Decided to kick warm from deep in the page, lost in the heart of her. It's always a beautiful day.
My vibration's been on so much it feels wrong. Hypersensitive to the clues when God's cheering me on. Did a lot of growing up as a man you transform. Yep. When you realize being stubborn isn't what's making you strong. I had to learn the hard way, survive the many hard days before I found out the best way to be is free from part A. Simple shit, you already know, I probably didn't have to say. I can only hope you've been smarter than me on the road that you came. On the road to riches, the bullet holes and snitches. Uh-huh. Fake bitches and having to step over boa constrictors.
You know?
Like in the motion pictures, treacherous old broken bridges.
You
diving
remember.
For the cliff just as the fucking rope is ripping.
You seen
that
trying
one. To cope, I know I'm different. But if you ever been homeless or woke up with roaches on your dishes, you ain't hoeing up a bitch and
you
just going and hope that you get it.
You
but if you
know.
Don't, DMX showed us that there's poetry and slipping. Art always takes on a life of its own. What's foreign to you? Someone else in its home. I pour my heart out on the page and make sense of it all. Whatever it means to you, I'll never tell you you're wrong. Live it and breathe it, take it or leave it. The canvas, a ball of clay. For me, it's when the beat hit. For me, it's when the beat hit. For me, it's when the beat hit. I paid the price for what I write just so you can keep it. I'm a walking contradiction and bounce between extremes. One day I'm all for peace, the next day for watching you
bleed.
A wolf that can be seen at times mixed in with the sheep. Exercise my right to vote, but I don't think it means a thing. We're a long way from ever finally breaking free of these man-made shortcomings to cripple human beings. Behind the scene, money exchanges hands. Reveals the creature of man. Not the root of evil, but the reason we detach. The hide that doesn't last, that people never seem to catch. With the green paper placebo pill, our power is enhanced. Not historical facts, when talking flowers of the past. The artists that taught us the rawness that we never saw in class. The torchbearers of culture that burning deep like an altar. A beacon for whenever you're grieving and dealing with losses. How much does that cost? What happens so often is dead artists finally get applauded. Easier to rip off. And cough. Art always takes on a life of its own. What's foreign to you? Someone else in its home. I pour my heart out on the page and make sense of it all. Whatever it means to you, I'll never tell you you're wrong. Live it and breathe it. Take it or leave it. The canvas, a ball of clay. For me, it's when the beat hit. For me, it's when the beat hit. For me, it's when the beat hit. I paid the price for what I write just so you can keep it. Art always takes on a life of its own. What's foreign to you? Someone else in its home. I pour my heart out on the page and make sense of it all. Whatever it means to you, I'll never tell you you're wrong. Live it and breathe it. Take it or leave it. The canvas, a ball of clay. For me, it's when the beat hit. For me, it's when the beat hit. For me, it's when the beat hit. I paid the price for what I write just so you can keep it.
Recording there, Dexter. Wonderful performance. I'm really glad that you shared this with us. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
Dex is amazing. I mean, I'm a little biased because we do the show together and we're sort of friends, but I love it. I really liked his chorus, I guess, that repeats where it talks about art taking on a form of its own, and like different people might interpret it in different ways, and you know, there's not necessarily a wrong interpretation. When you write poetry and music, it can mean different things to different people, and he's always encouraged that, like with his writing, when we talk about it on the shows, that he wants you to put yourself in it too. And I like that. And I really like the line, I paid the price for what I write just so you can keep it. So it's like, you know, putting your painful life experiences into your writing, and then maybe you've gone through that stuff just so you can pass it on in your art. It's really, I think, a deep piece. I really like that his raps always have some kind of, like, deeper message. And, you know, it's not just, like, posturing. I mean, I like rap, but there's a lot of it that's a little bit more shallow, unfortunately. And I think that he really hits the field, and he makes you think. And I really like that when rap can take on more meaning like this.
Absolutely. Though I will say occasionally I like to indulge in the more shallow stuff, like who can ever forget I'm like big butt and you other brothers can't deny, you know, I mean, it sticks with you. You're right.
I mean, like, what guy doesn't
wonderful.
Like a big butt? I mean, come on.
What's that?
I said, what guy doesn't like a big butt? I mean, you're totally right on.
Right? Right? Ones that have bad taste. And but yeah, he does do a wonderful job of going deep with his lyrics. Excellent comment. And Silk, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. This is a great rap. I mean, I was listening to it, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe he did this. Like, the whole time he's listening, it was great. I mean, because I remember when he first came out, and I think he's come a nice way here with his poetry and his raps here. And this was awesome. I loved, I'm a walking contradiction and bounce between these. One day I'm all for peace, the next for watching you bleed. A wolf that can be seen at times mixed in with the sheep. Exercise my right to vote, but I don't think it means a thing. We are long ways away from all of us finally breaking free. I like that piece right there most of all, among all the rest. But it was an awesome piece all the way through, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that section that you picked out, too, the whole idea of being that walking contradiction, because I think that fits many of us. We have those days, you know, where, you know, some days we feel like we're healed, and other days we feel like the anger, the rage is coming back. And Rackentor, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this had a lot of substance to it. Emphasizing a person's point of view. I like what I think you had mentioned it, Pam, when you were talking about Faziana did perspective of something, you know, it varies almost from moment to moment, even depending on how you feel, you know, the individual point of view and stuff. The verse that I liked the best was the one where he mentions the finding the roaches on your dishes. That was very visceral and very, I think, to the point of you know, decay and you know, really to get your skin crawl. He did a fantastic job with that line. That's you know, ultra visual and relatable to me. That's an excellent verse. Lead into it, you know, he's talking about coping and whatnot, you know, it almost speaks to the futility of it sometimes, because, you know, Sisyphus rolling the rock up the hill or shoveling, you know, shit into the tides, it's got all of that wrapped up in it, you know, no matter what you do, you wake up and you still find the roaches on your dishes. It's like, really, you know, why do I bother sometimes? I really appreciated that overall.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was some great visceral imagery there. And what I liked about this one is it was a dark right, but it was a dark right that had to do with reality, the reality of when you deal with people who stab you in the back or are fake, the reality of being homeless or being poor, the reality of struggling with life, of trying to gain control of your emotions and the struggle. But while it was a dark rite, it also had a real sense of healing to it. You know, healing through art, healing through poetry, through music. And as you had mentioned to Faziana, when it says, you know, about sharing the pain through the words, you know, that it shows that there's something good, something that comes out of the pain we go through. You know, and in the form of poetry or song lyrics. And so I just thought this was an excellent write and very well done. All right. And up next, we are going back to the stories contest, the Dark and Creepy Tales, and the last three that we're going to read of that are ones that they weren't able to make recordings. I will say Time Teller did try to make a recording, but for some reason it didn't work. So up next we have Dying to Find You by Time Teller. And Faziana, would you give that a read for us, please?
Of course. Dying to Find You by Time Teller. This week's horror show is Dying to Find You by Jonathan Blake, recorded at the Old Mill Studio, produced by ATS Productions, and starring in the main role, Anita Hall, an aspiring actress and one to be looked out for. Dying to Meet You, Episode 1, Rid of It. Our body never likes the shit we eat. A rusty bit of crap inside our hemoglobin has a habit of breaking away and clogging the sewers of arteries and veins. The old doctor called it bloodletting. Others use leeches. Well, that's my excuse, doctor. I self-harm to let out the demons every fucking day. I feel the pulse of life beat its rhythms from out my body. And those demons that latch to the smell of iron lick its ferocious taste with a febrile ferocity before spilling out onto the bathroom floor. I think we will keep you in for another 6 weeks, Emma. We will review then. A nurse steps forward. Episode 2, Crowds. Emma, do these demons talk to you? The crowd gets louder. The busier I become, I am a victim of my success. I do wish sometimes they would shut up and go away, or that shopping for bread didn't mean chat after chat after chat. Do people ever recognize you? You are a model, are you not? Yes, I get recognized and propositioned. That's when the iron hits so hot, burning me from inside, every cell a bonfire. I dream of projecting the heat through my eyes. If looks could kill, Gabriel, zap, zap. I swear, just getting breakfast at the cafe would leave ashes after ashes. That's why I have to let go, let him out, give it freedom to infect someone else. But it never seems to get enough out. Or maybe it's not fast enough. He can cling to the walls, feeding on the iron as it rushes past on the way out. Exit left, demon. Another 6 weeks, I believe, nurse. Episode 3, Lost Family. How was your family visit yesterday? They don't look like me, not at all. I see them fat and bloated, always eating, always takeaways. We are the shit we eat, are we not, doctor? And they don't bleed like me. They coagulate and scar and heal. They bend and twist and turn. Why don't they ever snap? Scream at me, shout hurtful promises, and split ultimatums that they don't truly mean until they lose faith and it becomes self-enforced bluff gone wrong. Do you love them? I do, doctor. Truly, I do. But they are not my real family. And I am alone in this world until I find my real family. Episode 4, Home at Last. How do you feel now? I am good. My demon is behaving himself. He stays within my chest and enjoys the things I like. Are you pleased at having found your real family? I am. I love them. They're quirky, but they look like me. I see myself in all of them. It's great having new sisters and brothers. And you still feel the need to let him out. And I have only let him out once, doctor. Emma didn't like my birth name. He wanted out. And out I let him. Hot, volcanic larva flowing like a loving arm around everybody. Now, the metal has all but cooled, and my blood coagulates. The heart feels now it's in the right place. Home again by the fireplace, in my favorite chair, my favorite wine, and my chocolates with my cold and new family, my old and new families together. So I think Emma is in control now. And oh, doctor, I am in love with this new show. Listen with me, it's grand, don't you think? What's it about? An actress. And Paul.
Wonderful read there, Faviana, and I have to say this is an epic write. I also feel bad because as you're reading it, I happen to be looking at comments, and I realized somehow I had missed commenting on this one. And I always try to comment on every entry in a contest, but sometimes, unfortunately, they get missed. This is wonderful. This is something I could see being performed on a stage. I thought he had wonderful use of scenes and dialogue. And Rackentor, your thoughts?
I thought this was a very engaging story. I really enjoyed it. Like you said, I could easily see this on the screen. The comments about letting him out and everything. There's a duality to that thought of people cutting or bloodletting. When they cut themselves. I think that kind of reads into this as well as what she's talking about. But I really appreciated it. It was dark and creepy. Very engaging. You wanted to figure out what was going on, and the doctor keeping her there every 6 months and everything. And she left the door open about her new family too. So it was really interesting.
Absolutely, well said. And Silk, your thoughts?
Yeah. First off, I gotta say, Aphasia, that was an amazing read. As you were reading it, I actually looked ahead and saw there was a SoundCloud, and I was sitting there wondering, like, damn, did Aphasia? I was thinking, did you do the SoundCloud for them or what? Because it was so good, I thought I was listening to a recording there, and I'm not joking. And plus, the quality of this write too, it was like a fantastic little mini screenplay. I love the back and forth play of Emma here, and just the episode changes. And this is like just an amazing, I don't know, I've never seen something quite like this. It was like a brevity of a play, honestly. And I just dug it. It's great all the way around.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree that it's very much like seeing a one-act play. So excellent comments. And Aphasiana, you did read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
I had a really fun time reading this. I thought that it went so well with the contest because in the contest, you're talking about the old-time radio kind of soap operas that they did before TV, and I feel like this worked as that. It was like a play,
yeah,
but you didn't need to actually see it. It was awesome. I really liked that it was the back and forth with the nurse. It created a setting. It gave the context of this is someone who's receiving help for presumably mental illness, and the way that it was described was really good. I confess, I was a cutter in the past. I'm not anymore, but the way that it described it was like spot on. It was really well done. I really liked the end when she refers to herself in the third person. So I think Emma is in control now. But that shows you Emma is not in control because Emma's talking about herself in that way. And I think that kind of creates almost like a cliffhanger at the end. This was very well done. I had so much fun reading it.
Absolutely. And a good catch there because you're right. When she speaks of herself in the third person, it shows that she's not really in control. Plus, when it says, when she mentions the show she's listening to and what's it about an actress, and then it starts to make you think that all this pretending, all this being all right and in control is acting. So excellent tale and very well done. All right. I'm thinking we'll definitely be having carryovers for the next Stark show, so which is all right because it's good to have extras. All right. Okay, well, Silk can stay on for one more piece, which means we're going to go ahead and put him to work. So I'm going
to... Yeah, that's why I said it, just in case you want me to read something.
Absolutely. All right.
I don't mean to hit and run. I've had a long day, and I'm getting pretty tired.
Oh, I completely understand. And all right, up next is Brains by Reflection Shadow. And Silk, go ahead and give that a refresh, please.
Sure thing. I usually like their poetry, too. This should be good. Brains. Decomposing corpses with living eyes. Mutilated, building, abandoned in recent times. Where no ghosts dare to tread the abandoned children of men. Their eyes bloodshot, possessed by time. Cursed with the writhing of the demon named Denny. They move as puppets do, high as heaven, but clearly from the lower place. And they possess the kiss of death or denial of the saints, with their hearts being pulled by some nether realm beast. You too shall join the party. And even the spirit will not accept because you are now cursed, tabooed, or written out the book of life. You are cursed, dead while you are alive, wondering, moaning with no end. No one understands. You are the living dead. The one word spoken is brains. Episode 1, The Silence of One. It was always beautiful. Sunny side up, that is what my days were, filled with sun. Man said to his psychologist, the man was a 45-year-old with slick back black hair and worked as a bartender. This was his weekly visit. I never believed in God. I don't think God believed in me, he said. Were you even married? Said the psychologist. No, he said with hesitation. Well, actually once, but she no longer is a part of my life. This piqued the interest of the psychologist. Will you explain? He asked, interested. Yes, said the man. It was a 3-year anniversary. And we were celebrating her birthday. She was turning 37, and we were spending the time with her mother. Does this look good? She said to me. Yes, dear, it looks very nice. You're not even listening, she pouted. It was true I wasn't. I read in the paper about the end of the world is near. Could 1978 be when the aliens arrive, shaking my head and placing the paper down. And I looked out the window. There were no aliens, no monsters of any sort. Are you ready? I said to her. Oh, yes, she replied. I think so. We got into the car and drove. On the trip there, we saw a strange sign that said, did you wake up alive? Remember to drink? Jolly good Joe. This was odd because my name is Joe, he continued to the psychologist. Ah, I replied to the psychologist. Continue, he added. Yes, anyway, we got to her mother's and it was normal as any, but for one thing, he admitted, which was, commented the psychologist. She was wearing a different dress from the one she picked out. He added, like it meant something. Maybe she changed her mind while you weren't paying attention, he said. No, I was with her the whole trip. It was when she was with her mother. Afterwards, I asked for a divorce. I was afraid of her. From that point on, she changed, her eyes were green, and she ate this black paste. It was like she was from another world. finished the psychologist. Yes, how did you? And looking now, the psychologist was an alien too. Don't worry, this is confidential between us. He closes the shades and proceeds to eat them in. His screams are heard but not seen. And poem.
That was right. And that was just an excellent read there, Silk, because, you know, when you have a long write like that, and it was just wonderfully done, but you kept a good read tone throughout the whole thing. And so very well done. I have to say, yeah, this is epic darkness.
You.
I like the classic sci-fi feel. It really reminds me of some of the movies that you might see in, like, the 50s, 60s, 70s. You know, very cool. And Faziana, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. It has, like, some twists to it. It's kind of interesting how nonchalant he is. Like, no, I was never married. Oh, yeah, there was that one time, you know, when I thought she was an alien, so I divorced her. At the beginning, he's like, no. Oh, yeah, you know, for a little while. It was our 3-year anniversary. But he's just so casual about it. Oh, yeah, that time. And, like, when he's thrown off because the billboard has his name, I was like, what's going on with this guy? Then it's creepy where, like, suddenly she was wearing something different, and at first I thought the man, the husband, was the problem because he wasn't paying attention, and, like, it was just going to be him. But then the psychologist eats him, and I was like, whoa, that took a turn.
Right, that was a twist.
It was like a classic, like, really old school sci-fi, and I enjoyed that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And Rakentor, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like the storytelling, and it had a beautiful twist in the end. There was actually a movie that it reminded me of a little bit. It's called Crazy as Hell. I think it came out in the 70s. It starred Eric LaSalle. It's about this guy that comes to a psychiatrist, and he claimed that he was the devil. And the whole thing, you didn't really know exactly which one to put under the microscope, because everyone was dropping hints like, you know, this is nuts, this is nuts. You didn't know who was crazy, who was the crazy one, and who wasn't. So it kind of reminded me of that. There were a lot of twists to this, you know. It's just, he's focusing on, you know, her dress changed color, and he's not paying attention. You know, it sounded like, you know, okay, so he's clearly the one with the problem, and then, you know, the psychiatrist is the one with the with the appetite. So, yeah, I like the twist.
Absolutely, yeah, that was a great twist at the end. And I like also how he has some bits of, it almost seems like kind of a dark humor in this that I think really adds to the punch in the storyline. And Silk, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I read it a little different. I mean, it did have a little twist at the end, but I kind of saw something of it coming, because this whole thing, it was kind of like it was, I don't know, setting up for that end as I read it too, because to me it read kind of like a bad acid trip, at least when I got about halfway through it. Because as I was reading it, I got up here. He had this, like, little poem here that went down to the episode one. Like the whole poem was just a quote for the rest of the piece. And I was like, damn. And I started reading. And to me, it started sounding like, to me, like this was a guy sitting in the chair of his psychiatrist just talking and slowly becoming more and more insane, or just the world around him becoming more and more unraveled. I don't know. So that's kind of what struck me in a way, was he was describing all these things that came around, because I loved how at first his wife was the alien, and then the doctor was the alien. And then it kind of gave you the impression that everybody was the alien, and he was the one that was out of place and not everybody else. Or that everybody else was out of place and he wasn't, I mean. And That's what I meant. And, yeah, he just came to that gruesome end there. Like, damn. Really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. All right, Silk, I know you need to get going. So you have a good rest of the night, and enjoy your weekend. Make sure to find some time to treat yourself.
Oh, yeah, I'll try to call in tomorrow or something. You guys
okay.
Have a good night. And greetings, everybody.
Night.
Good night. Lots of love.
Lots of love to you, too. Take care. All right. Let's see here. Up next, we have They Didn't Notice by Nan529. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. And it goes like this. Sunny day, they popped into an antique shop. It was there they spotted the old radio, searching around, chatting, looking at the memorabilia, giggling as they talked of memories past, old toys they played with, fur coats, hats, stands, vintage clothes, clockwork toys, smell of dust hung heavy in the air. They were drawn back to the radio. I'll give you a good price, a voice said. They brought it, placing it on the sideboard. They plugged it in. Nothing. They laughed. They didn't notice at first objects disappearing. They went to bed. They heard footsteps on the stairs. They checked nothing there. They didn't notice the dark shadow standing in the room watching them. They didn't notice the change in atmosphere. They noticed noises at night. They noticed how depressed they started to feel. Were they imagining? Feelings of dread felt each time they walked up the path. It was a sunny day. He screamed at her, so unlike him. She didn't notice the gun in his hand. It was his eyes, black as night as he pulled the trigger. Bullets shot through at high velocity, penetrating her skin, exploding in her brain. He took the gun, pointed it at his head, pulled the trigger. Now he's dead. Radio comes to life as it glows deadly silence. A blood-curdling laugh rings out. Bodies lay as police investigated the crime scene. Weeks later, in an antique shop, stands the old radio. Young couple enters the antique shop. Picking it up, they hear a voice say, I'll give you a good price. Walking out of the shop, radio in their hand. End poem. And I thought that was just an excellent dark tale. It so had a Twilight Zone vibe that I really appreciated. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
For me, the ending is the most important, that the next couple also is clearly getting sucked into this. Having that frame it where it starts like that and it ends like that, so it's like it's a never-ending cycle. I thought that was a clever way of framing the story.
Absolutely, and you're right. The ending is a very important part, especially in a dark story, and like you said, the other couple getting sucked into it. And I like that this dealt with kind of almost a psychological darkness and how they slowly, they notice little things, but it was too late by the time they realized something was truly wrong. And Rackentor, your thoughts?
Yeah, the subtlety of not giving you anything overt is really handled very well in the storytelling. And setting it in the antique shop is kind of classic, you know, that's where all these horrible things go down, right? And that's where the gremlins came from and things like that. You know, it's got to be some antique shop run by some little old person, all hunched over, and you know that catch line, I'll give you a good price. That was also a classic that made this a very compelling piece, a very it kind of gets under your skin a little bit, I think. You know, very memorable.
Absolutely, I have to agree. Definitely a memorable dark ride, and great comments. All right, let's see if we can get a couple more in before the end of the show. All right.
Oh, can I add one quick thing on that?
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry, Pam. I was just thinking that because this is supposed to be like something that would be on an old-fashioned radio, like soap opera kind of thing, it's especially appropriate that it's like it's the haunted radio. So you're listening to the radio and you're thinking about this haunted radio. So it's like it's that connection where maybe you're experiencing it. Okay. Sorry, I'm thinking out loud.
I like that. That is a really good catch. Yeah, you're right. That does add kind of an extra layer to the whole the thought of the story. So very cool. All right. And now we're going to write for the picture prompt contest. And the next one up was our goal winner for that contest. This is Doom's Fledgling by Image and Visions. And Aphasiana, would you give that a read for us, please?
Doom's Fledgling by Image and Visions. In vast wastelands, toxic and forgotten, where nuclear vapors accompanies morning dews, creating puddles of carcinogenic sludge, both caustic and putrid. Lands where DNA-mutated scavengers dine on fermenting zombie flesh, and lone wastelanders who venture into exclusion zones scantily protected. Lay boots of ignominious biohazard survivalists, like shrines of stupidity to those who failed in survival's quest to travel lands barren and lifeless. With its sinister cause of mocking tribute and warning dire and forbidding sits, solitary figure of Doom's Fledgling, with blackened feathers and beady eyes, in anticipation of the next pathetic traveler. And Paul.
Great read there, Aphasiana. And I have to say, this write really impressed me. It was borderline abstract, which I liked. But what I had said was that it's strong visceral imagery and epic storytelling. And I liked how the write reminds us that of the horrific consequences of when mankind tries to act like gods. I thought this was a wonderful mocking tribute to the fools that tempt fate. Excellent writing, very well done. And then Rackentor, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really appreciated the language used throughout this wonderful vocabulary. And I think that the last verse tied it up beautifully, like you mentioned. It's not really scattered all over the place. It's kind of focused, but that last line brings everything right into the picture for me, you know, waiting for the next traveler. It speaks to me of that cycle, like you're saying, you know, the repetition of something happening over and over again, you know, almost like, you know, those that ignore history are doomed to repeat it, kind of a thought. Really very ominous. I could see why this could win a gold in your contest. Really appreciated it.
Absolutely. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. I liked, like Raconteur was saying, the vocabulary. Here's an example. Carcinogenic and ignominious. I can't even say it right. Ignominious biohazard. I really enjoyed the language. But the part that kind of hit me was more like a contemporary way of saying it, like shrines of stupidity. I really like that because it's like that warning of like, don't be dumb and walk across this place because you're going to die. And the bird is using this kind of method of like, you know, in old times, there would be heads on stakes as like a warning, like, don't come attack us because this is what you'll end up like. Well, the bird has that going. You know, here are the boots that show this is what happens to humans who come into my little area. And that anticipation of the next pathetic traveler, that attitude of the bird is captured so well in that line. This is very nicely done.
Absolutely, absolutely well said there. All right, the last write for the night will be The City of the Dead by Poetry, who is the silver winner. And the rest I will carry over either to next Thursday show or the next dark show, which will be the week after. I will definitely find spots for them. And this goes like this. As I find myself glancing more often at the bodies I pass every day, I have begun to realize that life no longer surrounds me. These days, faces that graze my vision are merely contents of thin muscle and tissue quivering beneath taut skin that hangs from the weakest of bones. The hopeful eyes of society, which once stared mercifully back at me, are now engulfed by plumes of purple pigment and bright bloodshot sockets. The hands which once shook my own are calloused and cracked with bleeding nail beds. Each scar tells a different story. Each bruise narrates a different fight. The smiles that flash back at my own are browning, yellow, and porous, and the gums that once housed fluorescent teeth now spit them out like chewed sunflower seeds. The hearts that were once sown into the good of humanity leave carved out at the feet of their owners. Their broken beats and shattered rhythms create a dissident thunder that echoes through the mist. For the first time, I realized that I was a mere scintilla of joy drowning within a sea of gloom, and now I too lay lifeless amongst the city of the dead. End poem. I actually, I really liked that one, and I don't think I've seen poetry, so writing a lot in my contest, so I'm hoping to see and hear more from her. I thought this was an epic dark story poem, and I like how it has that post-apocalyptic feel, and with a main character that tries desperately to be a symbolism of hope, but, you know, in the end, death comes to us all, and hope often ends up laying amongst the ashes. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I really liked the way that it broke it down into the different elements that you see in a person and how those things have changed. The eyes, the hands, the smile, the heart, to realize how each one of these things had a connection that is now different was really great. I loved the scar part. Where is it? Each scar tells a different story. Each bruise narrates a different fight. I love that narrates was the choice of word there. Like, it doesn't just tell it, but it narrates that fight. Every bit of the person that has been affected that you can see physically also kind of represents what's happened to them on an emotional level and what they've gone through. So I thought this was just brilliant in its use of imagery to describe, like, the horrors of society falling apart.
Absolutely. Absolutely well said there. All right. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show. Make sure to check out upcoming shows and contests and topic boards that our hosts and hostesses have going on, including this weekend. We have open poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. We have Part Sinner, Part Saint with Afasiana and Babbler. And we have Rhythm and Rhyme with Intimidus Rex. And thank you very much to Tom, to Afasiana, to Silk, and Rackentor for calling in. Rex, I hope you're getting some much-needed rest. I appreciate you all. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And have a good night, everyone.
Night, Pam. Night, Faze.